Today's program is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Ellie Truesdale, who was kind enough to curate the snack break at our annual food conference Jubilee this past March. She assembled a great group of women food entrepreneurs, including Homa Dashtaki from White Mustache and Emily Elson from 420 Blackbirds, both of whom we had earlier on the season of Radio Cherry Bomb. The rest of the year, Ellie is the Northeast Regional Local Forager for Whole Foods Market, which might be one of the world's best jobs if you're a foodie. Welcome to the show, Ellie.
Thank you.
Did you always want to work in food, and how did you get your start in the business?
I did always want to work in food, but I didn't exactly know how, and I certainly didn't know that I would end up as the local forager for Whole Foods Market. But I started my summer out of college. I started working at a summer stand in my hometown in Connecticut, basically because I didn't have a job and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do as far as quote-unquote serious work. So I worked at a produce stand selling fruits and vegetables for the summer, and I absolutely loved it. It kind of affirmed for me that I was really interested in food, and in a way that was a little more active than what I had envisioned. I think growing up, I kind of had a passive relationship with food. I love to eat it. I, you know, love great food, as a lot of people do. But I became a lot more interested in food policy and the food system in a larger way that summer, as I was reading a ton and working at the summer stand. So that's what got my start. And then from there, started looking into other food jobs and food opportunities.
How did you get your job at Whole Foods?
I was pretty lucky. We so often focus on internal movement, so people really work their way up from stores. So I started at a store about 7 years ago, November of 2008. I started as a marketing team leader at the Westport store in Connecticut, and that, you know, really led me to where I am now, because I was able to work with a lot of different product teams and had a ton of different experiences from starting at the stores and moving into the regional team years later.
I know you don't really have a typical day, but what are some of your responsibilities as a forager?
Each day is very different from one to the next, which keeps it really fun and exciting and pretty crazy at times. Certain days I'm at the office, heavy communication, a lot of emails, a lot of catching up with people. I do work with a larger team of buyers, and we trade ideas, we trade food trends, things that we're seeing, and we do a lot of collaboration and partnership internally. But the majority of my time is spent with producers, with growers, with food makers of all varieties. So doing a lot of farm visits, facility visits. I have a ton of meetings and tastings with people who are making this food, both to vet and review product, but also to offer them advice and guidance and develop brands so that they can be successful at retail.
So how do you find these local producers? Do they come to you, or do you do research and find them?
Since starting, I've been the forager for about 3 years. It's been interesting because it's taken different shapes. I think starting out, I was really actively, constantly seeking out new vendors. You know, I was always looking for new producers and doing whatever I could to find them. And, you know, 3 years later, I really have built this pretty incredible network in New York, but also just in the Northeast region. We cover 33 stores in the tri-state area. So now it's great because I still do seek out and find new producers, but I also am now found. So I get a lot. I mean, hundreds of unsolicited samples sent to our office. I get a lot of relayed and passed on emails from other suppliers and from friends of friends and from people who have read a story about my role or, you know, have seen something, and they find me somehow. So it's a mix. It's certainly a lot of it is being out there and discovering something, but it's also through a larger network of food producers.
And so what do you look for in a producer who is coming to you and wanting to be distributed in Whole Foods?
A lot of things to look for, and it is different from product category to product category, but the first and kind of most important thing for us at Whole Foods is quality standards. So we do have a pretty tireless list of acceptable and unacceptable ingredients. So I start there. You know, I ask a lot of questions about how the food is being made, how it's being grown, and that's going to be different for a produce farmer as it is from a dairy farmer, as it is from a, you know, pizza producer. It can vary. But I think the cool thing about the way that we work and the way that my role is set up is that I can find an amazing bakery. For instance, right now we're doing a lot of work on our Harlem store that's set to open late next year. And I found this awesome guy, Harlem Pie Man is his brand name. He's making incredible pecan pies and navy bean pie that we loved. But we did, in reviewing his ingredients to start, had to swap out a couple of things. So in that case, just because he's really small, he hasn't ever had to really think about, you know, changing something out or where he would find the resource to do that. So we got him connected with one of our cage-free egg suppliers, and he was able to switch that. And we were able to connect him with a dairy source that's hormone-free and at a really great cost as well. So those relationships kind of unfold as they come, but that's a really big part of the initial review and initial consideration of a product.
And I mean, you talked about it briefly, but you guys do have a program to mentor these small companies and get them kind of scaled up maybe to distribute.
Yeah, so that's a huge part of my role, and it's, I mean, pretty amazing that a company of our size can dedicate one person's role entirely to local small producers. So beyond just finding new suppliers, very much the idea and the goal of my role is to set that person or those people up for success. So I offer a lot of kind of small business advice. I give a lot of resources and contacts and really try to develop these brands so that they launch successfully with us. So that's one piece to it. But we also have a dedicated program, the Local Producer Loan Program, that we handle regionally across the country. And it's a pretty amazing thing. We offer low rate, fixed rate loans to our suppliers who need capital for something like, you know, a truck or an oven to expand their business. And we've I oversee the program here in the Northeast, and recently we've granted two loans that I'm especially excited about. We just did a loan for Satter Farms. They're out on Long Island in the North Fork, and they've been longtime partners of us. We've bought from them for about 7 years, but they are expanding with every year and needed more money to grow their acreage and to help their wash line, you know, get some piece of equipment so that they could help make them more efficient and get better food safety practices in line as they grew. So we were able to support that with a small loan, and now that allows them to expand throughout the region to our prepared foods program, so outside of just our produce sets. So there's a lot of cool things that come from the loan itself, but then also the relationship that's there, that's beyond, it's, you know, it's really outside of just a straight like lender receiver as in a bank. You really have a relationship with these people, and you can talk through, how is this going to be used? How are we going to be able to make this an even more exciting and dynamic program? And actually, Satter Farms is pretty cool because their other 6 months of the year, when they're not growing in New York, they grow in Florida. And we have also been able to connect them with our Florida region. So now they're growing for and have a great wholesale relationship with our stores in Florida during those 6 months of the year.
That's amazing, because I go to a lot of Whole Foods store, and I do see like differences in what they all carry. So each store kind of has its own personality.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the amazing thing about the company. You know, we're very decentralized. So our global offices are in Austin, Texas, but we're set up as 11 regions around the country. And our regional offices act as support to our stores. So the idea is that each store really has its own product mix. It has its own feeling to reflect the community that it's in. And that's both on a just general kind of vibe, but also in terms of sourcing and the products you're going to find on the shelf. So the Brooklyn store is going to look very different than the Darien, Connecticut store is from the Boulder, Colorado store, which is pretty amazing. And that's a big part of my role is making sure that each store's product mix feels relevant and right for that customer.
Are there any recent discoveries that you're really excited about?
Yeah, there are a lot. You know, it's prime time, it's growing season, which I love because I'm getting to visit a lot of farms right now. We just had on Monday a funny special delivery of this sticky purple corn come from one of our New Jersey suppliers who's normally their biggest business with us are our Asian pears, these Korean Asian pears, the Shinko pear that's just amazing. But they're growing a small crop of this sticky corn that's very starch-like. And they delivered it to the office on Monday. I was getting texts from all of my coworkers that night, like, what exactly do I do with this? But it's a pretty cool product, very unique, and only will be around for a certain period of time. And we've got a couple other things. I just connected with a supplier and had a meeting with someone yesterday who's doing some seed butters, so like pumpkin seed butter and sunflower seed butter, which I think is a cool next iteration to the nut butter because we have a ton of almond and peanut and cashew. So excited about the seed butters for sure.
Last question. What's your go-to snack these days since you're like queen of the snacks?
Oh gosh. My go-to snack, I just mentioned nut butters, but I am a huge fan of just almond or peanut butter on a rice cake with berries or some sort of, you know, I love just PB&J on a rice cake, but my ultimate, especially in the summer, is almond butter and raspberries on a rice cake.
Cool. So in this mentoring program, is there a case study that you can give us? Someone that you helped grow from like a small business to a larger size business?
Yeah, we've had a lot of examples of that through the loan program, but one more recently is Van Leeuwen Artisan Ice Cream. They're awesome producers of ice cream out here in Greenpoint in Brooklyn, and we realized that there was this pretty big opportunity with their vegan line. We introduced and launched their first vegan ice cream at the Brooklyn store in Gowanus when we opened in December last year. So we launched that exclusively and it was a huge hit, but also is amazing, amazing vegan ice cream. It's a coconut cashew base and you really just haven't found anything comparable to it in the market. So in knowing that and in knowing they wanted to expand and to continue to produce in Brooklyn, they needed some financing for equipment. So we helped them out with a loan, and now they're able to produce a ton more vegan, which for us is great because we can grow them throughout our region here in the Northeast, but we also are starting to make introductions so that they can launch in our Southern Pacific region in California so they can move to Pacific Northwest. So a huge part of the loan program is not only fostering and developing those brands here locally, but also finding opportunities for them in other regions or other parts of the country that they want to grow into.
That's amazing. And Van Leeuwen just came out with a cookbook in case anyone wants to go out and buy it. They do have the vegan recipes in there.
Yes.
We love ice cream at Cherry Bomb. Are there any other brands that have come up recently that you love?
Yeah, we have so many great local ice creams. It's kind of insane. It's been a really big hot category in ice cream. So one actually that's really classic, very kind of standard, but hugely popular and does really, really well for us is Arethusa Farm Dairy. They're in Litchfield, Connecticut. And it's pretty cool because they own and operate a farm, a dairy farm, but they also have their creamery and their ice cream production right down the street, which is rare that, you know, you're getting the farm and the production happening in the same place. It's wonderful ice cream. It's really classic. They have strawberry, mint chip, chocolate, vanilla. So straightforward. And actually recently in a meeting, I did a whole lineup of probably 16 different flavors of ice cream with some really, really crazy ones. You know, we've got some awesome and interesting seasonal flavors right now and a lot of kind of crazy, crazy tasting notes going on. But I was very interested that everyone gravitated to the strawberry and the mint chip from Arethusa. Everyone just kind of wanted that standard, like, you know, brings you back to your childhood
comfort
flavor.
Food.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that, I think, is something that I see a lot in my job is that, you know, we are, at the end of the day, a grocery store and people are shopping with us to have something in their freezer or their fridge or in their pantry for a long time. So we always have to find that balance of like, what do people really want to be tasting every day at home versus ice cream that they're going to have as a scoop flavor when they're out, you know, in Manhattan or out really like being adventurous. So I've seen that with ice cream, but we also have some amazing and really interesting non-dairy versions that are coming out of, you know, coconut horchatas. And we've got a cool recent brand that just launched called Banane, and it's mostly banana based. So lots of different non-dairy ice treats coming out as well.
Are there any overall food trends that you're seeing these days?
Gosh, a lot. It seems like, you know, one, every time you kind of feel like you've got a new one, you're moving on to the next. But I think that people really right now want health meeting convenience. They're not really willing to sacrifice one or the other, which is fun and interesting. It's cool for me to see how innovative producers can be knowing that. So looking to find ways to get health into someone's really busy life. So we have a lot of, you know, I think green juice has kind of gone away, and now we're seeing a lot of blended smoothie producers, but they're using really interesting ingredients. We've got, you know, a lot of avocado. We've got this great producer, Luli Tonics, and she's doing some really awesome blended greens drinks that have all sorts of savory flavors. It's like lemon peel and pink sea salt. She's using microgreens and olive oil. It's really interesting. It's almost like you're drinking a salad, but they're totally delicious, and they're very much ready to drink on the go types of drinks that our customers seem to love.
Well, thanks for being here today, Ellie. I know you're busy with some new store openings in New Jersey and Harlem, so thanks for taking the time to come out here.
Thanks so much for having me.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Everybody, welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, the co-founder and editorial director of Cherry Bomb magazine. For part two of today's show, we're live with Yes Way Rosé. I'm so excited for this show. This lifestyle brand slash movement slash community was founded by my friend, fashion editor Erica Blumenthal, and graphic designer Nikki Huguenier, of course, I practice it 10 times, Huguenier. For whatever reason, they're not in the Hamptons today on this hot, humid weekend drinking rosé and being fabulous. So they're here with us at Heritage Radio, located in the back of Roberta's restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record Radio Cherry Bomb every week. So ladies, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So super excited that you're here. So are we. We also have Claudia Wu with us in the recording studio.
Hi, I'm back.
And we also have Liz Maney, our assistant slash official documentarian. Liz is taking some pictures, so if you hear that weird buzzing noise in the back, that's what it's all about. Before we got on the air, we were in the back having some pizza and drinking some rosé, as one does, at Roberta's, and you both told me you wish you had radio alter ego names.
Well, we've never been on the radio before, definitely not together, so we thought it might be more fun if we had some code names, like I could be Nikki Nickerson.
I could be Ricka Rosé, sort of a take on Ricky Rosé.
I blew that for you guys. I should have introduced you as such. So,
okay.
And appropriately, we are drinking rosé. So we don't always drink. We usually drink water on when we record Radio Cherry Bomb, which I guess is kind of boring. But today we are spicing it up somewhat. I just grabbed the bottle with hashtag summer water. You know, if you guys are listening, we'll talk about this a bit more. But Yes Way Rosé are major on social media. And the hashtag is summer water. And they're at Yes Way Rosé for all their social channels. So right now, you guys can talk about this a little. Before we talk about you guys, let's talk about what we're drinking. We've got some, who knows how to say the name, Chateau
d'Esclans, I believe. It's the Rock Angel. It's a limited edition for this year.
It's the same company that makes Whispering Angel, which is very popular.
Ooh. So Whispering Angel and Rock Angel. I'm going to have a sip. Is everybody ready?
Ready.
Let's have a sip.
Let's
try to be audible. You guys don't do... My boyfriend does the breathing in of the air.
Oh,
when
like
he's yes, yes. I noticed no. You guys don't
yeah,
do
no,
that.
No, we just like to drink rosé. we just like to say, is it good? Yeah, it's good. We can drink this.
We did Delectable this. For those of you who don't know what Delectable is, it's my favorite app. I feel like I've become this Delectable evangelist. But it's this great app that uses facial recognition technology, and you just hold it up to the bottle of wine that you happen to be drinking, and it instantly tells you the name of the wine, the rating, the price, how you can order it. So it's really, really fun if you've ever had one of those experiences where you're in a restaurant, you're obsessed with this bottle of wine that you're having, and you want to buy it. And this helps you do that. So we delectabled, I don't know if that's a verb relating to this, but we delectabled the bottle, and it rated really well. It got a 9.
It's really good.
Only 8 reviews. But the one pro rating was a 9.1.
So, solid.
Okay, good.
Solid rosé here today.
It's a great radio show drinking rosé.
The best. And it comes from Provence.
It does.
So
it's delicious.
You can't beat that. It's a cork, though. Do you guys have opinions on cork versus screw top?
I think they each have their purpose. I think... Obviously, the screw top can be perfect for the beach day rosé. You're at the beach. You don't want to deal with heavy machinery, and you just need easy access. But a cork can be nice. So I think there's like definitely a ceremony to opening a bottle with a cork that can be nice. I think it's good to have both in your life.
Erica?
Yeah, I opt for both. The screw cap... can seem to keep the rosé longer if you don't finish it in one sitting, but we don't normally have that problem. So cork or screw cap doesn't really make a difference, especially in the summertime.
There's definitely no shame in a screw top anymore.
No.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, they're making really, really nice wines with screw tops. It's just, it's like economical, I think, and it's just, especially with rosé, that's usually a newer wine. It's not something that's being aged. The cork really is just for show, I feel like.
So you shouldn't keep that bottle of rosé in your wine storage area for too long.
No, I
drink
think
it.
That's kind of the fun thing about rosé is that it's new every year. We're drinking rosés from last summer, from the summer before. We're not drinking rosé from 5 years ago, except in very special cases. So it's just really like a fun, new, young wine that really changes every year, which just keeps it exciting.
So let's talk about you two. Erica, I've known for years and adore. Nikki and I are new friends. These two rolled in here. They're so fabulous. Nikki's got on the Yes Way Rosé t-shirt that is available on your website.
Yeah.
Great t-shirt. Nikki is a graphic designer, so no surprise that their merch is awesome. And Erica has on the prettiest rosé pink skirt from Madewell, right?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of the same... Well, we have all of our Yes Way Rosé merch, but then we've sort of acquired similar items because we want to be on brand when we host events or host wine tastings or go to meetings. And so there was a week this year where we just showed up wearing the exact same thing
every day.
So we have to communicate a lot about it.
Now we text before I told her I was wearing this. Not that it would be bad if we both showed up in the t-shirt. It could be cute.
But we already sort of look alike, so...
Yeah, you guys could be sisters.
We get the sisters thing a lot.
Claudia and I don't look like sisters at all, but we often carry our cherry bomb tote at the same time, and sometimes it's embarrassing. It depends where it is. I saw 3 guys on the street the other day, and they all had on striped t-shirts.
Amazing.
Striped shirts are trending for men.
Yeah. I was embarrassed for them, but it reminded me that striped shirts are so popular now, and anybody who's, I don't know, cool has a striped t-shirt in their closet. And I was wondering how people are going to have to negotiate more, because you don't want to be that party that shows up and everybody's rocking a striped t-shirt.
Yesterday we met up with a big group of friends in Prospect Park, and there was at least two couples that had to change because they both got dressed in the same outfit to meet at the park, and they were talking about how, like, who had to change their outfit.
That happens. I feel like that happens when you're a couple. You start to dress alike.
We're basically a couple at this point, the amount of time we spend together. So that's we're developing the same thing.
And then you guys also have a nail polish, which is so amazing. Yes, Way Rosé nail polish that's available at...
So also on our website, shop.yeswayrosé.com.
And we made it with 10 over 10, so it's available in their salons as well.
And I have a surprise for you guys. Look where I was.
I saw that.
I was
looking at your toes, yes. And I was just saying, it's beautiful. Doesn't that look just like rosé vibes?
Because it is.
because it is.
Christine Mulkey, who a lot of our listeners know, she's been on Radio Cherry Bomb and in our magazine. She's a big editor at Bon Appetit. She brought me to 10 over 10, and I was like... Yes, Way Rosé has a nail polish. I was like, I only have one option as to what color I'm getting my pedicure.
Aww, isn't it so great?
It looks fabulous.
It's great. It's great. It is a great color. All right, so back to you two. So where did you guys grow up?
Baltimore.
We both grew up in Baltimore. We know each other from growing up.
No.
Yes.
Okay, tell us a story.
I think we met probably in eighth grade-ish.
Tell us a story while I drink more rosé.
I had been going to the same school for a while, so Erica was kind of new kid at school, and we met, and she also has a twin sister who is another close friend of mine, and the three of us quickly bonded over, like, sleepovers and 90210. We both had crushes on David Silver. So, we've been friends for a really long time.
And how did you both wind up in New York City?
For school, but we didn't really, we sort of... We were always been friends, but during school time, didn't hang out as much. And then after college, I was working at Jane Magazine, had run into Nikki, sort of helped her get an internship.
Yeah,
there.
I was looking for my first design internship, and then I interned at Jane for a little bit.
And we've been together ever since.
So we skipped ahead a little, but at what age did you have your first drink?
I probably had my first drink pretty early. My parents definitely were the kind of people that, you know, would have a drink every night at the end of the day. And the first drink I can remember having is my parents loved Tanqueray and tonic with a lemon and a lime. And I tasted it, and it tasted just kind of like soda, like Sprite to me. So that was, like, definitely a drink of mine for a long time when I first started drinking, and now I can't really drink them anymore.
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah.
What are we talking about, like age 11? No, I'm kidding. Like...
No, early. I mean, not... I wasn't drinking it early, but when I tasted it, I mean, I was a kid. I would say I started drinking, you know, like 15, you know.
Erica?
I mean, the first drink I probably ever had was during Passover, drinking 4 glasses of wine. I think we had kiddie cups, but we were... I don't know what age we were not drinking grape juice, but I remember having wine at Passover, a little Manischewitz. Pretty young, but then my first sort of unsupervised beverage was with my older sister. It was vodka OJ, a screwdriver. Is that what that is?
Oh, that was my first drink.
Yeah. So she would my twin and I. We have two older sisters, and one was spending the summer in DC and went to visit her at the house she was staying, and she let us drink. So
I thought screwdrivers were the height of sophistication.
Yeah, I definitely can't drink those. I really can't drink vodka anymore after, like, high school and college. So.
Yeah, same here.
It's a no for me.
I would drink screwdrivers, and I would drink Bartle and James wine coolers.
Loved
and
a wine cooler.
I thought I was so sophisticated compared to everyone else who was drinking beer.
You probably were.
Maybe, but looking back, not terribly. But yeah, I don't think you could pay me to drink a screwdriver today. So when did you first discover rosé?
I definitely have memories of my grandmother drinking pink wine when I was growing up. It was definitely some kind of white Zinfandel situation. I don't think I ever tried it, but I did have, like, this memory of it, and it wasn't, I don't know, it definitely wasn't something that I really knew anything about. And I can't remember when it happened, but it was, like, maybe 4 summers ago. Rosé was just around, and we started drinking it, and we started drinking it together, and then we started drinking it every day in the summer, and it just became a thing. And that's it's really where Gaspé Rosé came from, is that we started calling rosé summer water because it was like how we stayed hydrated in the summer.
and we just realized you could drink so much of it.
Like, it just goes down so fast, so easy.
And it's so beautiful. Just like having it here makes us, having it on the table in front of us now makes it so much more special. It just changes everything.
It is,
you know?
So beautiful. I mean, I have to say, not to keep promoting the Rock Angel, but the color is beautiful.
That's what we love. This is a super light, pale pink rosé. We were finding this style of rosé that was really speaking to us and just talking about it all the time. I mean, we've never had a subject like this that we've talked about as much as rosé.
Who came up with the name Yes Way Rosé? It's brilliant.
I don't even know. I mean, I think we have this idea. We knew we wanted to do some kind of like Instagram. I mean, some kind of like Instagram or social media thing about rosé. So we threw around a couple different names. We definitely almost did not call it Yes Way Rosé. I don't know what would have happened if we did that. We probably wouldn't be sitting here. We were wanting to call it like Everything's Coming Up Rosé or something like that. But finally, thankfully, we settled on Yes Way Rosé. And
then use summer water as the hashtag. But before Yes Way Rosé, the conversation was about summer water, and people were really into that. And we were making our friends laugh, and we were making each other laugh and coming up with these jokes just about the color. And our first tweet was, it's 10 p.m. Do you know what your next three glasses of rosé are? Hashtag summer water. And that was... That was all it took. And then we realized it's, you know, rosé is so beautiful, we need to photograph it all the time.
Why do you think it took off as fast as it did?
Our Instagram? I think there was a lot of friends that we had that were drinking rosé with us, and they were our first followers, and it took off fast, but not super fast in the beginning. It was definitely like a slow crawl for a while. We were posting through, like, the winter. And then it was really last summer that it kind of exploded a little bit.
But I think at the beginning, Instagram wasn't this super precious thing where everyone you follow is someone that has to be curated. You're, you know, who you follow and your followers. So I would take people's phones and be like, you have to follow this thing we're doing. And just, we didn't know, have visions of a line of, you know, like the
visions
merch
of rosé
visions
grandeur.
Of rosé grandeur. Yeah, exactly. But I was just like, oh, this is, I'm really feeling this. You'll feel it too. But I don't do that at all anymore. That would be really aggressive.
You mentioned the off season. Are you year round rosé drinkers?
We are. #summerwater365. I think there's really no reason that rosé needs to be a seasonal beverage. I think maybe like a lot of the smaller batch rosés, they do run out in the summer because people are so enthusiastic about drinking rosé. But there's definitely rosé, at least like French rosé, is available all year round. And it can be a delightful beverage to have with like your Thanksgiving dinner, or it goes really well with food. And it can just be like a pick-me-up.
And there's more fuller-bodied, medium-bodied rosés that would go better, you know, with a steak in the fall or the winter, or something that doesn't feel so summery. And we also love champagne and sparkling rosé. It's like, why drink champagne when you could drink rosé champagne?
Pink champagne, people.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an option.
I should mention that you two are not French operatives. You are not being paid by the Rosé Association of France, which I'm joking.
But that doesn't mean we're not open to it.
Yeah, if you're listening, our email is yesfayrosé@gmail.com.
I know there is a Rosé Foundation, whatever, of France, but I haven't heard about them.
No.
But they should know about you too.
We're not sponsored.
So do you two feel obliged to order rosé every time you go out to eat?
We definitely check out the rosé options everywhere we go. But sometimes, you know, we just want a cocktail. We love cocktails,
too. We had margaritas on Friday night.
Yeah, but we do drink a lot of rosé.
I could see spotting you at a restaurant and definitely looking at what you're ordering and being like, oh, my God, you guys are drinking red wine.
Well, yeah, that would be bad.
Sometimes you're in a bar or you're not really, or a restaurant, you're not taken with the rosé that they have, mm-hmm. or you don't, you know, so you have to go with something, a safety beverage.
Yeah, rosé definitely gets the short shrift on menus.
A lot of places don't have rosé by the glass, which I think is just crazy. So sometimes you just want to get a drink, and they have rosé by the bottle, maybe, but not by the glass. And so they're just forcing me into that cocktail, that whiskey menu.
What do you think that's about? Is rosé just not respected as much as white, red, sparkling?
I think so. I think it's definitely obviously on the rise, and I think we will get to that point, especially in New York, soon. And a lot of places do have multiple rosés by the glass, but I think it just, for so long in the States, it wasn't respected because of, like, that white Zinfandel my grandmother was drinking, and people just didn't understand that it is a sophisticated wine, and that it's not sweet, and it's not sugary, and it's not any different than, like, a fine white or red wine. So I think more and more we'll start to see that. I hope. That's, you know, that's part of our mission, for sure, to spread the word.
But I think some restaurants are, like, we've seen restaurants that have full rosé menus. People who get it really get it. And then I think it's a risk probably for some bars that just have, like, have a red and white, and then they don't know how well it will do. But I think that it will sell out if you have it in a bar.
Do you think it's because it's considered a girly wine?
Well, there's definitely a tinge of that, which I don't know if I'm allowed to say. While we're sitting here, we can see some of these diners at Roberta's, and there's a man in front of me drinking rosé, and I want to give him a high five, because there are still some guys that think rosé is too girly, or they're like, I like it, but I wouldn't order that at a bar. But that's obviously silly. In Europe, all the men are drinking rosé. It's just something that, again, will, like, take time. And, you know, I think any man out there who thinks they don't like rosé, you just need to try a good rosé.
We're not girly girls either, you know.
So tell us about your wine collaboration.
So
we
teamed up with Club W after we had kind of become Instagram friends with this guy who is his name Brian Smith, and he's a winemaker. He makes the Rosé Jolifolle. That's another one of our faves. And he is the chief wine officer at Club W. And he reached out to us when we first started. He liked what we were doing, and we worked with Club W on kind of this blog post. And then this past summer, they contacted us. They're like, would you be interested in collaborating on a wine? And we were like, yes, please. So it was awesome. They were really great, and they kind of let us have the control to what to call it, and I got to design the label, which was really fun. So, of course, naturally, we wanted to go back to our roots and call it Summer Water, and it ended up being just that. It was a beautiful rosé Pinot Noir from Napa, and just so easy to drink and beautiful, and it sold out in less than a month.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So it's gone now, unfortunately, but hopefully we're working on making more next year. We'll see.
Did it intrigue you about the process?
Definitely. This time around, we weren't with this collaboration, we came in a little bit later in the process, so we weren't involved in, like, the actual, like, the harvest or the blending, but that's definitely something that we're trying to get more involved in this year, and a harvest is coming up pretty soon, so that's exciting.
We're
looking forward to getting our hands on some grapes.
Erica, yes. I can see you all I Love Lucy style stomping the grapes.
I think about it every day. I'm excited. We didn't start this ever thinking we would be in this position, so it's all just this incredible surprise in life, and now I think about wine, rosé, more than anything else, so, and the process, so that's really a dream, would be to see it from start to finish.
So I love rosé. I definitely have two favorites. I love Wolfer rosé. I think that's so crazy drinkable. And
they started doing screw caps this year for the first time. So, and that's a really nice rosé. So,
yeah, it's such a drinkable, fabulous summer rosé. But I also love Brad Pitt's rosé, Miraval.
We do too.
For those of you who don't know, Brad Pitt does own a winery, which is, I mean,
I'm pretty sure they live. I'm pretty sure the chateau, their house in France, is Chateau Miraval, where, like, their estate where they live, and there's a vineyard on the property where it's made. That's what I've read, and I'm pretty sure that's where Miraval's made. So they're really living the dream, you know?
I'm not that up on Brad and Angelina's multiple residences, but I had read about the Rosé. You know, I was curious. Couldn't find it in New York, but I was up in Maine, and I spotted a bottle, and I grabbed one. The bottle itself is so beautiful. It's a different bottle.
Yeah, it's very unique.
Yeah, I don't know the technical term for it, but it's a little... The base is a little curvier.
Like a brandy bottle. It's like a wider, rounder
shape. But the rosé itself is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's really
very
beautiful.
Good. I think we... You know, you hear about it, these celebrity rosés, and you kind of like want to hate it, and then you taste it, and you're like, this is amazing.
Yeah, my day job at Yahoo Food, I did get sent the Duck Dynasty wine, which I did not open. I gave that away. But yeah, you have to be cautious about those celebrity collaborations. But this one, I think they're super serious about it because the rosé was beautiful. But I think that needs to be your next collaboration
with Brangelina.
Uh-huh. Well, you can just adopt
Brad
us.
And Angelina, if you're listening,
we're available for adoption, and we'll move to Miraval. We'll take care of it for you.
We can be the pitch groundskeepers. At 10. You don't need to sleep in your house
if you're listening. My phone number.
I think
is.
They listen. I think they listen every week, so that shouldn't be.
I think they partner with it's Perrin, a big winemaker who helps them. So it's a really, I have a Wine Spectator with Brad Pitt on the cover, so we can really get to the bottom of this.
I saw that one. So let's talk next about the rosé ice cube. So I am a fan of ice in my rosé, but like everybody else, it dilutes your rosé. I remember being in Paris with friends, and we would always ask for ice for our rosé, and then basically treated like war criminals, because asking for ice for your wine in France is basically grounds
for being
kicked out of the country.
Yeah.
So you two posted that picture on Instagram of the rosé ice cubes, and I was like, this is the most brilliant thing ever. We regrammed it, and the comments, I think we got almost like 50% comments over out of like 1,000 likes. And it was crazy because the comments weren't just like, oh, cute idea. It was like, game changer.
Genius.
Yes.
We had like over 400 comments when we posted it, too. And
I mean, we obviously have a lot more followers now, so it's become a bigger deal. But we did post that 2 years ago. It was when we started Yesterday Rosé, we were already deeply immersed in rosé. And we had tried all these things. And I think... The rosé ice cube came about in a similar way that, you know, there are certain coffee places that have coffee ice cubes for your iced coffee, which is, like, brilliant because you don't want to dilute your coffee. You make a coffee ice cube, and I think I had that in my head, and we were going to Montauk for the weekend. It was the weekend we started Yesterday Rosé. It was really the 4th of July, 2 summers ago. And we had all these giant bottles of rosé. I was like, well, we have all this extra. Let's just see what would happen if we filled up all the ice trays in this house we're staying with rosé. And sure enough, it freezes into like a very nice slushy consistency where you can either use it to keep your rosé cool, or you can pour some sparkling water over and then let it slowly melt into this delicious spritzer.
Yeah, for those of you out there curious about turning your rosé into ice cubes, we did have some people who asked, how can you make alcohol into an ice cube? But wine isn't 100% alcohol. We're not talking vodka here.
Yeah, it's only like 12% alcohol. It does freeze. You might need like a spoon. It's almost like you got to scoop the cubes out. They don't pop out like an ice cube would, but it's pretty solid.
I love this. Claudia, we're like a DIY show now. This is fabulous. And I'm also super impressed. I just assumed you guys lifted that from like an old copy of Martha Stewart. But you are the mother of the rosé ice cube.
I would like to think so. I mean, I'm sure that other people have frozen wine before, maybe by accident even. But we definitely have been posting about the cubes for a while. But now that we have thousands more followers, I think more people are noticing.
And that picture really captured how beautiful it can be. That was taken with a box of rosé. You just, you know, push the button.
Amazing. My plan was to come here and impress you guys with my Yes Way Rosé pedicure and some rosé ice cubes. But I was missing the one crucial component.
Rosé.
Ice cube tray.
Oh, yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Rosé is not a problem in my house, but we have an automatic ice cube thing in the fridge. So
Yeah. Can you imagine if it automatically made? Oh my gosh.
Well, your fridge pushed, like, water came out the front, but it was rosé.
My kitchen's not that advanced yet, but who knows? Who knows? You know, we were talking about Brad Pitt's wine and your collaboration with Club W. Have you two tried the Fat Jews rosé? Talk about a social media superstar.
We have not.
We haven't tried it.
You haven't tried it?
No.
He didn't send you one?
They haven't sent us one.
Fat Jew. What's... Come on.
But people seem really excited about it, and he has such a huge following, so it's definitely spreading the rosé word.
I'm shocked. You two are being kind of quiet, so maybe we're going to skip to the next question. So, advice for choosing rosé in a wine shop or on a menu? What does one look for?
I think you look for, you look for the year, like we were saying. If you're in a shop, you're looking for rosés that are from the most recent year, usually. Anything from Provence that's, like, light in color, you'll probably be happy. But if you're looking for something more interesting, there's a lot of great rosés being made in the U.S., different parts of California. I think if you're in a restaurant, you can ask, like we always say, like, we want the driest rosé. That usually ends up being our favorite. And we ask what color, like which one's lighter, which one's darker. Usually.
Oh, I never thought of asking the light dark question. I always ask which is the least sweet.
Yes.
So, I don't, who in the world drinks sweet rosé?
I don't know. My grandmother.
Well, maybe there's a demi-sec rosé champagne that's slightly sweet that could be good, but not for dinner drinking.
Right. So any other tips? I'm a big believer in shopping by the label.
Yes.
If I'm totally confused and there are too many things to choose from, I'm a big believer that the more interesting the label, mm-hmm. the better the wine.
Of course. I mean, I'm a graphic designer, so I'm always buying by label anyway, but...
Jordan Salcido might be dying right now if she's listening to us. She's the beverage director at the Momofuku restaurants, and she was a guest last week on Heritage Radio and Radio Cherry Bomb. She, I'm sure professional somms don't agree with the shopping by the label theory, but I think there's something to it.
Totally. Especially if you're bringing, let's say you're picking up a bottle of rosé to bring to a dinner party. It's nice to give a gift that's like aesthetically pleasing.
And for us, the rosé experience is such a full package. It's about how the wine tastes, but it's also about the label and the story behind the bottle and what we learn about winemakers sometimes, you know, makes us want to try the wine or like enjoy it more or something.
Right, the story behind it.
So that's, it's, you know, maybe it's not the greatest rosé in the world, but there's, it's made with so much love and the story is really beautiful and it just makes it also this incredible experience.
So we only have a few minutes left and we only have a few sips of this rosé left. So ladies, your glasses, let's finish this rosé. Oh, empty glasses. We're bad. We're terrible hosts here. Here we go. All right. So I understand you have an event coming up.
Yeah, we're doing a really fun event that we're really excited about. I don't know if you guys know the women who do Lois Bar on the Lower East Side.
L-O-I-S?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's right in between. There's like the Alphabet ABC Wine Company and ABC Beer Company. And
that's convenient.
There's two women.
Conveniently located.
Best friends, and they open the spot together. And one is like the wine person, and one is the food person, Nora and Phoebe. And they open this beautiful wine bar where all the wines are on tap, all of them.
Wow.
And
which is perfect for rosé.
They love rosé, and they wanted to do an event with us. So next Sunday,
a week from today,
August 9th, Lois Bar, 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Rosé frites, three pairings of different rosés and different French fries.
It'll blow your mind.
It'll blow your mind.
What, three till when? Because obviously six. People will be listening to Radio Cherry Bomb and then they can go. And then they
3 to there. 6 p.m. is the event, but we'll probably be there all day.
Cool.
We're really excited about it because we love the bar. We love them. And it's always nice to work with like two women best friends who are doing what we're doing. It's like a passion project for them, and they just like love doing it. And
naturally we've taste tested and we can confirm that it's a delicious situation you would like to get yourself into.
Rosé and French fries.
Yeah.
It's the living the dream.
Why not? Claudia and Liz, I think let's put that on the calendar. I think we need to go investigate next week after the show's finished. So, ladies, this was great.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we got you on Radio Cherry Bomb.
I'm sure there's something fabulous you could be doing that involved lots of rosé and...
This is pretty fab.
The beach.
This feels pretty good.
This is good. This is good. And we're surrounded by people who love rosé, so... That was fun, too. So thank you for joining us, and thank you to the audience for listening. Radio Cherry Bomb is a production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio. You can download our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and you can always listen on heritageradionetwork.org. And to quote the great Fran Lebowitz, not that we agree with this quote, but great people talk about ideas, average people talk about things, and small people talk about wine. Ladies, here's to the small people.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.